I call the Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 17th, 2025, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Dunbar, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. I believe Senator Hughes will be along shortly. Senator Klayman is excused today. We have one item on our agenda. That's Senate Bill 105, State Land for Recreational Cabin Sites. So this is the first hearing of this bill, and I would welcome Commissioner Boyle to the table to introduce the bill, along with Christy Coles, Director, Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Let's see, on the line we have some folks also. Tim Schilling is online, Resource Manager, Department of Natural Resources. Diana Leinberger, Natural Resource Manager, Department of Natural Resources, Division, Mining, Land, and Water. And let's see, is Chris Orman. Yes, Chris Orman, Assistant Attorney General, Natural Resources Section, Department of Law. So those three folks are online for questions only. Welcome, Commissioner, if you would introduce Senate Bill 105.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Giesel, Vice Chair Wilikowski, and honorable members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, this is John Boyle, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, for the record, and I am joined by Director Christy Collis of our Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And happy St. Patrick's Day. It's great to see the green out there for the folks proud of their Irish heritage. It's our privilege to talk to you today about Senate Bill 105, and I just thought I'd outline a few of the high-level policy rationale for the bill. Fundamentally, less than 1%, roughly 1% of Alaska is in private hands. And I think, you know, all of us appreciate having access to public lands, having the ability to get out, enjoy our state's beautiful surroundings. But the relative dearth of private lands means that for those that hope to have a little piece of Alaska to make their own, it can be challenging, and it can be, one, challenging just to have the availability of some of these recreational properties. And, of course, as we all know from Economics 101, a reduced supply generally it means that prices tend to be a little higher than maybe they otherwise would be. And so, you know, the governor's rationale with this bill is, how can we find ways of increasing the supply of land to Alaskans to where we can promote more private, personal recreation and responsible use. And so I think, you know, that really underpins his desire to create a mechanism by which people can select sites. Maybe these are places that are special to them, places where they recreate, places that they go to find that cathartic release, from the constraints of modern urban society, and where they go to remind themselves of why it is that they live in this wonderful state. And, you know, the governor believes also that it's important to create opportunities for people to where they have the freedom to go out and select places that they think are suitable for them versus more of a command and control kind of response of where the government dictates or mandates, you know, where certain things can and can't take place. I think, you know, getting Alaska back to its roots of being a state to where people, again, can stake out a piece of land for themselves and where they can feel like they have some skin in the game when it comes to making Alaska their home. Part of the purpose of this bill as well is to help streamline the process that we have for both leasing and purchasing recreational cabin sites, which in the past has proved to be thorny at times. And ultimately, you know, for playing into some of the themes that we've heard from this committee before, help support more economic opportunities when it comes to outdoor recreation and stewardship of our lands by, again, enabling people to pick up a piece of the state and have an opportunity to pursue their dreams. And I think, you know, fundamentally for those that it helps level the playing field somewhat for those that have entered the state recently and that, again, haven't had a chance to find a little piece of Alaska to call their own where they can build memories as a family and develop a special connection to a place. So, you know, in broad terms, these are the principles that the governor has articulated. This is why we're ready to have this conversation with you, and I'm, you know, happy to make this introduction, and then Director Collis will help walk you guys through the presentation. I apologize, but I do have to step out because I have a prior obligation here that I need to attend to. But
so before you go, Commissioner, Senator Dunbar had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to correct something for the record or allow the Commissioner to correct something. He stated that less than 1% of Alaska was in private hands. I think he probably meant something like private individual hands because, of course, Alaska Native corporations are private corporations. So much more than Alaska, the 1% is in private hands. Is that right, Commissioner?
Yeah, Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I'll defer to my experts on what the percent is, but I know the percent of lands in private hands, whether that is private individual hands or even actually Alaska Native Corporation lands, it is a small percent of the overall state ownership. But thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for the Commissioner before he goes? All right. Well, thank you very much, Commissioner. Welcome, right. Ms. Collis.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Giesel, Vice Chair Wilikowski, and members of the committee. I'm Christy Collis. I'm the Director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water within the Department of Natural Resources, and thanks for having me here today. Article 8, Section 1 of the Alaska Constitution establishes the state's policy to encourage the settlement and development of its resources, making them available for maximum use consistent with the public interest. Expanding private land ownership directly supports this policy by fueling economic growth, strengthening property rights, and fostering responsible land stewardship. When individuals own land, they are more likely to invest in improvements, driving demand for housing, infrastructure, and local businesses. This in turn stimulates job creation, increases property values, and broadens the tax base, laying the foundation for long-term economic prosperity. While this bill does not authorize commercial development, private sales naturally spur economic activity. As the populations grow in newly developed areas, demand for goods, services, and public infrastructure rises, encouraging small businesses and service providers to establish themselves. Private ownership enables diverse and efficient development, allowing communities to grow organically while ensuring local decision-making remains at the forefront. Selling state land is not a new practice. The department already facilitates competitive and non-competitive land sales to individuals, industries, and municipalities. This legislation represents another opportunity to fulfill Alaska's constitutional mandate while advancing the governor's vision of expanding private land ownership. By placing more land into the hands of Alaskans, we unlock new pathways to home ownership, business expansion, and responsible resource development, building a stronger, self-sufficient Alaska. Now is the time to invest in our future by empowering Alaskans with the opportunity to own and develop the land they call home.
Thank you. And I just want to interject for a moment that Senator Hughes has been with us online since the beginning of the meeting. Thank you. I'll let you proceed, Director.
Thank you, Chair Giesel. Many of you have seen this map. This represents all of the land ownership across Alaska. And Senator Dunbar, you are correct that the land that's owned by the state of Alaska or by private individuals is less than 1%. Native corporations would add up another couple percentage into that. But then the majority of the land is owned by the federal government, about 60%, and the rest is owned by the state of Alaska. And then we also have, that basically sums it up. So this slide represents the land that has been withdrawn from the public general domain by the legislature, such as some land has been pulled out, that 100 million acres that we showed earlier. Some lands have been pulled out from the general public domain by the legislature, such as state parks, state game refuges, and this is a great starting place to show you this This is the unreserved, unappropriated lands, VUU lands, which is defined in AS 2965-130. So this is SB 105 does not limit to only the classifications within the VUU definition, resulting in some additional lands beyond the approximately 47 million acres that are represented here on this map.
And by this map, we're referring to slide 4 for folks that are listening at home and for Senator Hughes, who I know is online as well. I'll let you proceed.
All right, so slide 5. As I stated earlier, the department already sells state land for private use. We currently have two programs. The subdivision sales appeal to those individuals that would like to have established lots designed by the department with platted or developed roads. The fair market value is established, and folks can bid the minimum fair market price or above on any parcels they are interested in owning through our sealed bid process. If a parcel is not bid on during the auction, the department either moves that parcel to the following year or we move it to the over-the-counter sales. Nothing in SB 105 is going to change the way that we do our subdivision sales. The remote recreational calving staking program appeals to those that have the pioneer spirit and wish to stake their own boundaries for their future recreational site with a large area the state has identified for this type of sale. SB 105 is seeking to maintain the state offerings but also provide an option for individuals to nominate a site not already identified by the department.
Director Cole, Senator Wilikowski had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I get you to go back a slide? And it's probably just because I'm getting older and I can't read that really small print, but can you explain what the colors are identifying there?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. So the blue is representing the vacant, unappropriated, unreserved lands. So the main focus is that blue land, and I'll have to forgive me, I'm going to try to look at this right here.
And we're on slide 4 for members of the public that are online.
So that's the main focus of this map is that blue land is the vacant, unappropriated. That's about 47 million acres, and that means that it's classified in a way that we could dispose of that land.
Follow-up question?
So the blue is vacant, unappropriated, and the commissioner now can dispose of that land?
Well, it has classifications that would make it allowable. It's not pulled out legislatively designated by the legislature, so it's still within general public domain. So we could reclassify.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Does this include, like, refuges and state parks? What sort of land is this?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, this is not including state parks or refuges. So this is just a kind of a overall view of those lands that have not been pulled out for legislatively designated areas, such as state parks, refuges, or anything else. Now, there are components of the bill that are going to allow some types of land that have been pulled out through the personal use cabin program to be considered. But it's a very limited amount in the sense that not everybody can go and look at a legislatively designated area and select lands out of that particular land base.
Follow up?
I'm just curious, what can be allowed on this land? What sort of use is allowed on this land? What sort of disposition rights does the commissioner or the state have with these blue areas right now?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. So land is classified, and there's different classifications that we have. So right now, the commissioner could issue a lease on this land or an easement on this land. They could sell the land. Some of this land is already classified settlement, but sometimes the areas that we're looking at to sell for a subdivision sale, let's say, for example, may not be classified settlement. So we actually do reclassifications of land. If we go out, we talk to the public, we do agency review, and we decide, actually, this would be a great area for us to do a subdivision sale or a remote rec sale. When we do the decision process, we reclassify it so it can be settlement land so it can then be disposed.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
And I'm just trying to understand why you need this bill. It seems like you can already do a lot of these things with the current bill or with the current law.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we can do a lot of this already, but this bill is giving us the ability for somebody to nominate land. So right now, they cannot nominate a parcel. They have to work within the areas that we've identified. So if, you know, if somebody does know where they want to go, they can't then nominate it and then go through the process to get that land. They'd have to go through a staking area. Where they're competing against others that also want to be within that particular area that we've identified.
Follow up.
Not trying to dominate. I'm just trying to understand, Mr.
Of course,
Chair.
Of course. Good questions.
And but if somebody came to the department and said, hey, I think you should open up this area of land, is that something the commissioner would consider?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we can always consider areas that people nominate to us. So sometimes people would say if an area is somewhere that they're interested in, we could go through the process and potentially. But then we're going to go out for large areas. I do go over the remote rec sales now that we have and kind of the acreage that we're looking at and the number of stakers that we might allow within that area. That might help you understand kind of the current program and where we're trying to go with this new program.
All right. I see no further questions. I'll let you go forward, Director. Let's see slide six.
All right. So here's some examples of the areas that we have for staking. As you can see, so we'll look at this Mancomin Lake, 8,030 acres, and we allow 25 staking authorizations. So you're looking at sometimes you can go 10 to 20 acres per area. Somebody can choose how many acres they want to stake, but it's a maximum or a minimum. So that way they go in and they actually can choose their corners. So something I wanted to also go over for this slide is just a little bit of background. So this program did start in 2001. And since then, the department has advertised openings to stake 16 times on 66,940 acres. And there were within 86 staking areas. 830 parcels totaling 10,929 acres have been sold. And this shows the different just examples of areas.
Question, Senator Wilkowski. And
of those properties that have been sold, how many have actually been developed or had cabins put on them?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we don't actually track that on how much are actually developed. That would take a lot of time and manpower to go out to these areas. We do initially when somebody stakes, let's say everybody stakes, then we go out and we have a surveyor go out there. They survey all the parcels, and then we basically, once we do that, they get into contract or they pay off whatever the fair market value of that property is. And then we don't do follow-up on those unless there's some call that we received for compliance issues. Maybe they built too much into the setback. Some other reason that we would go out to that location.
All right, I see. Oh, Senator Wilkowski, follow-up.
And part of the reason I'm asking is because I guess what you're trying to do is expand this, and I'm just wondering if people are – if people are not currently developing what's being put out, like I think that's important for us to know. And I'd also be interested in how many people are returning the land back to the state, if you have that data.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we probably do have some failure rate numbers I could provide to the committee on exactly how many actually go forward. A lot of times folks might not be able to, maybe they realize they can't get to the property as easily as they thought, or there's a financial reason that they decide not to move forward, but we can get you that information.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So along the same lines earlier, you were talking about the public auctions. If it doesn't sell, you put it at the over-the-counter sale or maybe hold it over for the next year. Could you potentially provide us with failure rates for those as well, for, you know, how many parcels you've put up that don't get auctioned off successfully, or ones that have been put up for over-the-counter sales, you know, how long some of those may have been there waiting for a buyer?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, yes, we can give you some numbers on what would actually sit in the over-the-counter. And one thing I'll clarify as well is all of our sales are when they're out for auction or for Alaskan residents. And when they do go to over-the-counter, we do allow those that are not Alaskan residents to then purchase those parcels.
All right. I see no further questions.
All right. So now I'd like to expand on how this proposed bill will change the current remote recreational cabin staking program. Under the bill, recreational cabin sites would be made available through either a schedule of land offerings by the department, which is similar to what I just described, or through a nomination process. The commissioner's schedule would determine the number of acres an individual could stake, whereas the nomination is set at 10 acres. All types of classified general domain land are included in this program, except for mineral or oil and gas lands, with an exception to those individuals with a valid mining claim for 5 years. Nominated sites must be 1/4 mile apart from one another, except for those with a valid mining claim or a part of the personal use cabin sites discussed in Section 8 of this bill. An eligible applicant could apply for either a site in the commissioner's schedule of land offerings or through a nomination. The commissioner would then need to approve the application. If the application is approved, it would be public notice, and at that time, the decision could be appealed. The applicant could then obtain a lease for up to 10 years or purchase the parcel as soon as the survey and appraisal is completed, with the ultimate goal being private ownership.
Okay. All right, next slide, 8.
All right, slide 8. So this bill allows a lease to be authorized for up to 10 years with the ability to purchase the parcel at any time during the term of the lease. The lessee could assign the lease during the 10-year term if they decided not to proceed with the purchasing of the parcel. There would be fees established to ensure a fair market return for the use granted during the lease term that would then be applied towards the final purchase price. The purpose of the lease is to allow the applicant time to have the parcel surveyed and appraised. The lease could be terminated prior to expiration for noncompliance with the terms of the lease. And once a lessee is ready to purchase the parcel, they would be required to pay the fair market price, as well as the cost for appraisal, platting, and survey. The purchaser could pay the fair market price immediately or enter into a contract for up to 30 years with the state.
Any questions? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, it looks like, so under the current process, there is a requirement for public notice. And it looks like under this bill, if I'm reading it correctly, there's no requirement for public notice. Is that under Section 7? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we still have to do public notice. That's a constitutional mandate. So we would be doing public notice. If you look back at the previous slide, we would do public notice after the application was approved. So we would still have to write some sort of decision stating whether or not we were approving. If we're going to approve it, we're going to public notice it. And that's when it would be the public's opportunity to then appeal that decision. And we couldn't move forward with selling of that parcel until the appeal was decided by the commissioner. And it could also still go to court if the person appealing the decision did not agree with our decision.
Follow up.
So can you explain to me Section 7 of the bill? It says this section establishes the requirements for notice given by the department for the following actions. And then it says classification or reclassification of state land, except for land reclassified for lease or sale under AS 3805-600. That's being added. Why are you excluded? It appears to me that there's notice being excluded here.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we would not be doing a 945 notice for reclassification, but we'd still have to do notice for the actual decision to dispose of the land. So it's just a type of notice. We have other authorizations that do not require a 945 type notice. And so this would just preclude this from that type of notice.
Follow up.
What's a 945 notice?
Sorry. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Sorry for my lingo there, but it's a 3805-945 is the statute that we refer to when we're doing a specific type of notice. So our permits, we have other types of authorizations, shorefish leases, that do not require us to go through these 3805-945 notice, but we still provide notice on every type of authorization that we do within the division.
Follow up.
So you're not required to provide notice, but you provide notice. So let's just take this section out.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that would be a decision that would be made by the legislature if you so chose. We currently do use this, of course, when we are required. 3805035 does point to public notice for certain authorizations under 3805945. And so not just the Division of Mining Land and Water uses this section.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Using a lot of acronyms, and I can just imagine what – because this bill's attracted a lot of attention. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are watching this online and on TV right now. What are you trying to do by accepting this section from notice? What's the practical implication for Alaskans? I don't understand it.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think we're just trying to find a way to streamline and to have it where we're still doing public notice, but maybe not quite as the same requirements that particular statute calls out. But per the Constitution, we always provide public notice on disposals. And so we will provide that public notice so the public is aware of what actions we are taking.
Follow up.
So it sounds like a lesser degree of public notice. Explain to me the practical implication. Somebody, for the public out there that's watching this, what is the practical implication of the lesser notice that you're providing?
For the chair, this is Rena Miller, Special Assistant, Department of Natural Resources. I believe Chris Orman from the Department of Law is online, and perhaps he can walk the committee through the difference between the 945 type of notice and other standard notices.
Thank you. Mr. Orman, Assistant Attorney General, Natural Resources Section, Department of Law. Did you hear the question, and can you give us an answer?
Senator Giesel, this is Christopher Orman, Department of Law. I did hear the question from Senator Wilikowski, and I will do my best. I think the committee knows. Sometimes I've appeared before this committee, and I have a bad habit of not just acronyms, but sometimes just like citing statutes off the top of my head and referencing numbers. So please flag me if I go afoul and do that. So just backing up a little bit to help out and provide some context. So Article 8, Section 7 of the Constitution requires public notice of a disposal. And we have a lot of case law pursuant to disposal and what constitutes a disposal. So I provide that context because I think what we're grappling with here is talking about what is public notice under the Alaska Constitution versus what's in 3805945 notice. Now, the 3805945 notice is the notice that's been established and crafted by the legislature. And in doing so, the legislature has identified certain actions that it has deemed requires this 945 notice, to borrow Director Collins's language. And so a few of the things, and I want to be careful here because it becomes really simple to answer this question, just start reading out of the statute. But it is, and I'll try not to do that too much, but Section A of 945, of 3805945, starts listing the types of actions that the legislature has determined requires this 945 notice. And some of those are, as you've pointed out, Senator Wilikowski here, Section 7 has a general for a classification or reclassification of land, that type of notice, zoning of land, issuance of a preliminary written decision under 3805035, which is a best interest finding that you all probably know and talk about. Competitive disposal of an interest in state land. So there's eight things, if you will, that the legislature has identified that it has determined needs this kind of 945 notice, this higher level of notice. Now, you're probably saying, okay, that's great. There's eight things that the legislature has identified that has determined needs this higher level of notice. What does that notice kind of look like? Subsection B talks about the notice, and there's a requirement for it to be included on the Alaska Online Public Notice System for at least 30 consecutive days. A publication of a notice in display advertising form, so, in paper form. There's like a lot, and I'll try to not kind of run through all of them, but under subsection B, there's all of these kind of requirements. Some notice in the Alaska Online Public Notice System is, for a certain period of time, publication for a certain period of time. Subsection C of the statute then describes notice that will be provided to municipality that is in the area or close to the land in the area, regional corporation that has boundaries, you know, close to the potential land that's going to be disposed of, a village corporation, and then to the postmaster of a permanent settlement of more than 25 peoples located within 25 miles of the land that's potentially going to be disposed of or addressed in 945. So that's what's outlined in 3805-945 without getting into the weeds too much. Actually, I probably already did that. Apologies. But and as a result, the difference between that and the public notice and the Constitution is the public notice and the Constitution is a requirement that's been established not only by the Constitution, but then it's been interpreted and analyzed by the judiciary. And what's required under Article 8, Section 7 of public notice isn't arguably as stringent as what's in 3805-945. So that hopefully that answers your question. I know I was long-winded, and if you have additional questions, I'm here.
Follow-up? Very helpful. Thank you.
Next up, I have Senator Dunbar, then Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in here it discusses the lease-to-purchase option, and I'm sort of surprised, or perhaps we do have a way to do that already in our current law. Is there no way to structure a lease in such a way that it could give a first right of refusal or some other lease-to-purchase option in our existing law? We already, I mean, because in the previous slide, actually on this slide, you say lease or sale. Is it always one or the other, or can you structure it in such a way you can do a lease to buy?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. So with our current, we have a lot of programs. So with our current private individuals that we now lease to, it's only under our remote recreational cabin sites program. And we're doing a lease only so they can get into that purchase, so they can actually buy that land. The lease is just kind of that in between so they can get that survey and appraisal done. Now, maybe what you're thinking of when we do have some lease to sales is we have a public and charitable long-term leases that we'll sometimes issue. We have commercial leases that we'll issue, and they'll have a preference right at the end of that where we could then sell that land to them if they apply, and then we go through another decision process. But in our private, personal type programs that we now administer, they're all kind of a stopgap to get them to that purchase for a lease.
Follow up, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can we go to the next slide, please?
The next slide?
Yes. So, okay, so what you're saying there, the fourth bullet down, may purchase site any time during the term of the lease. This is something that's currently impossible under the current law?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. So it is possible under current law, but right now the way that we're doing it, and there's nothing that actually speaks to it under the statute about having a lease to sale under the remote rec program. We've kind of used that as a tool, a lease as a tool to be able to give them the rights to the land to be able to go in. They can even build actually at that time that they have a lease to be able to do that actual survey and appraisal so they can use it in between. And then they can use that the funds that they paid on the lease towards the purchase price and the survey costs. So it's not this is a new tool in the sense it's a 10-year term, so it's very specific, longer term, where right now we're doing about 3 years typically. Because it's going to be individuals going out and potentially having to pay for a survey and appraiser to go out there, we wanted to give them enough time for them to go out and have these actions happen, as well as ourselves, because we have to write survey instructions and appraisal instructions and review these things. So we wanted to give enough time.
Brief follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
And I think this connects to a question that Senator Wilkowski asked earlier. I'm sort of trying to suss out which of these things are impossible if we don't pass this bill. Mm-hmm. So you just said they get three-year leases now. That's what we do. We want to give them 10-year leases. Is there some restriction in our current law that says you can't go beyond a three-year lease?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. No, we don't typically – maybe that's something I need to ask Chris Orman about as well.
Mr. Orman, did you hear the question from Senator Dunbar?
Senator Geisel, Chris Foreman, again, for the record. I did. Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I'm actually going to want to look at that just really quickly and then probably get back to you. I know that 3805-600, so that's the current statute, the way the lease to then purchase kind of is set up, I don't believe that there's any language in there regarding years. I know that, for example, in the general leasing statutes in 3805-070, see, I'm doing that, and apologies in advance, 3805-070, and in particular 3805-075, the leasing statutes definitely distinguish between long-term leases and short-term leases, with 10 years being kind of the line in the sand. 10 years, anything more than 10 years is viewed as is a long-term lease. Anything shorter than 10 years is a short-term lease. But I just want to check a few things, if that's okay, and get back to you on that question just to make sure I'm not missing something as far as the process that DNR is currently implementing on 3805-600.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Orman, for that. Senator Kawasaki, you had a question.
Yeah, I think most of it was answered with the ending where, Mr. Orman, you said that a lot of the requirements under the public notice are just less stringent. And I wanted to go over some of those specific details, or to whoever can answer, actually. Under this, the original sections, general provisions for notice under 945, there's requirements for public notice, in particular, posting in a conspicuous location in the vicinity of the action, notification of parties known likely to be affected by the action, and another method calculated to reach affected parties. So those three won't be part of a new notice requirement under this law? And that's for whoever can answer that question.
Ms. Collis?
Yeah. For the record, Christy Collis, Director for the Division of Mine Land and Water. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. We would not have those exact same requirements. What we would be following is our public notice on our website. We actually have the online public notice. That's where we're trying to get folks to look for our online public notices, is the website, because that's where we post everything. And that is what we're trying to encourage people. So that's that would be our standard.
Follow-up, Senator Kosovo.
Yeah, thank you. I know that the legislature, or this body, actually had passed a bill just last year on that. Didn't pass the entire legislature, though. And so a publication of notice display advertising, describing the proposed action and reference in a newspaper of statewide circulation would no longer be utilized. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, this bill passes, okay, we would not do that particular type of notice.
Okay. And then municipalities, if the land were within those boundaries, would not be contacted?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, we actually a lot of times go above and beyond in just who we notice. So sometimes just even in noticing, we can do courtesy notices and let those that might be impacted, even those landowners that might be nearby. But it's just difficult because it's hard to find these folks and it takes a lot of time. It's just not a mandatory action, but I'll be honest with you, we typically go above and beyond because we just can't help ourselves.
Okay. Thank you, Director.
Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah, there's just a couple more. The one about the regional corporations, if the boundaries of the corporation are encompassed in the same land, but perhaps outside of the municipality, that's another one. To a village corporation organized under ANCSA, if the land's within 25 miles of the village, and to the postmaster, it was one that was also mentioned within the permanent settlement. This is a weird one. Nonprofit community organization or governing body that has requested notification in writing if the boundaries are within the land, within the boundaries. So those would no longer be a requirement under this law if this law were to pass as written.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, that is correct.
Thank you.
All right. I don't see any further questions on slide 8. I want to take a pause for a moment to see if Senator Hughes, who is online, might have any questions?
I'm fine, Senator Giesel. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. All right, I'll let you go forward, Director Colas.
So slide nine, this is one of the differences, I would say, too, of what we currently have in law. I think that question was asked earlier by Senator Dunbar. So Senate Bill 105 would allow individuals that have participated in the personal use cabinet program to nominate their site under AS 3805-600. For a bit of background, in 1984, the Personal Use Cabin Program, which I refer to as PUCP, was established when the legislature amended Alaska Statute 3804-0354 with the passage of Senate Bill 375. This allowed permitting of personal use cabins on state land where a long-range interest in public ownership and use existed. In 1985, the Department of Natural Resources promulgated regulations developing a cabin permit system to be phased out over a period of years. And in 1985, we publicly noticed a one-time opportunity to obtain a personal use cabin permit for existing cabins constructed on state land prior to August 1st, 1984. 421 applications were received for across the state, and permits were issued. Some of these sites were located in legislatively designated game refuges and critical habitat areas. In 1997, the legislature amended AS 3804-0354 with the passage of House Bill 109, which resulted in the removal of the statutory authority for the program. Since 1985, the program has been managed by the division under the regulations enacted at that time. Permits are reissued every 6 years, are only valid during the lifetime of the original permittees that were on the original application, and they could not be transferred or assigned to another person. But in 2022, legislation was passed that enabled the original permit holders of an active PUCP a one-time opportunity to transfer the permit to an immediate family member and add an immediate family member to the permit. As of today, 71 PUCP holders have utilized this new legislation option. SB 105 would provide a path for those individuals to purchase the land on which their cabin exists and have been used by multiple generations of the families. Status of the permits today across the state, we have 119 permits that are issued and active, 140 permits that are closed, and 162 cabins exist, but the permit's not active or is under appeal on a closure decision. And then this next slide does show just kind of a map of where those cabins are located. I know it's hard to see, but it just gives you an idea.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So looking at this map and looking at the numbers you had earlier, it seems like a very small number of cabins. And I don't just mean that small in the sense that it's been difficult to license these or permit them and whatnot, but we've all been into the woods in Alaska. We've all been around. We've probably been to our friends' cabins or whatnot. And there are way, way more cabins out there than the cabins on this map. So can you explain a little bit what all those cabins are and you know, and what the relationship is between those other cabins we have all seen versus these specific cabins?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Well, there's a lot of different reasons there could be cabins out there. You know, one, there's a lot of different land ownership, and sometimes you have inholdings where there might be a native allotment or something else where there's a cabin. We do have, of course, some cabins that exist in the state parks. We do have some trespass cabins. We have trapping cabins, so individuals that are out there doing trapping legitimately that have authorizations through us. We have all of our land sales programs that people could be having cabins for those particular programs. So there's really a variety of reasons that people might have cabins on state land.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
Brief follow-up. So there are many people in the Anchorage area who have cabins out in the Mat-Su or some other area. Are they typically not through this program, but through some other kind of private land sale?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that's correct. They could be through a private land sale, or like I said, there could be other reasons maybe that they were able to obtain that land through a native allotment. We're still doing a lot of those decisions as we speak. So yes, there could be reasons that other cabins exist beyond these.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Myers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So in the emails that we've all received a flurry of over the weekend, a lot of the consternation has been in Section 8 of the bill talking about state parks and other areas. Am I understanding it correctly that the only places in state parks and other designated other areas that we've already legislatively designated that would be open to the process in SB 105 is those few slots that had previously been reserved under the personal use cabin program?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, yes, that's correct. So no other land that's been legislatively designated, someone can't just nominate a new site out of that area, and it couldn't be like a state park that they can go in and nominate. And currently there is no PUCPs in state parks. They're all within a game refuge or a critical habitat area. All the ones that we have on record, at least, that we've been able to find, I give you the number of 421 because that's what our current records are, but it will be interesting, and that's why we can't say exactly how many will qualify because it's going to be on a case-by-case basis because the way the statute is written currently, it talks about being a cabin maintained, and some of these cabins are no longer there, and maybe it burnt down, maybe it got removed. There's a variety of reasons.
Okay. I don't see any other questions on this slide. I'll let you move on.
Right. If it will of the committee, I could do a sectional analysis.
Sure, that'd be great.
Right.
So we're on slide 11 for the public who are following.
Great. So, section 1 amends AS 3804020 to remove the word remote. Section 2 amends AS 3805035E to add a new section to exclude recreational cabin leases and sales from written findings. Section 3 amends AS 3805045 to include land disposal statute proposed, AS 3805600. Section 4 amends AS 3805065B to include proposed AS 3805600 regarding land sale contract payments and provisions for installment payments for a period of not more than 30 years. Section 5 amends AS 3805125A to add proposed AS 3805600 to the list of statutes subject to the reservations outlined in AS 3805125A. And Section 6 outlines a new recreational cabin site program, which will include annual sales similar to the current program. Section 7 exempts reclassification of land under proposed AS 3805600 from public notice requirements under AS 3805945. Section 8 provides for transitioning personal use cabin permits into leases or sales. And Section 9 provides for transitioning measures for existing leases. Section 10 repeals the uncodified law under Section 8 regarding personal use cabins on June 30th, 2032. And Section 11 sets an immediate effective date.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. How much acreage could the commissioner allow a person to bid on or lease or purchase? Is there a maximum number of acreage?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the bill is set at 10 acres that somebody can nominate, and they can do that once every 10 years.
Follow-up.
I thought you mentioned something about subdivisions. Is that 10 acres apply to subdivisions also?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, subdivisions, we actually set the acreage, and those can vary. So those can go up to maybe even 20 acres. But typically, I'd say they're around 10 acres, and those are lots that we've established.
Follow-up.
And then how many acres in the state would this allow to be classified as or sold?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, well, with the VU lands, those are the lands that I can say are not legislatively designated, are not a park or critical habitat, is 47 million acres. But some of the lands that are not all classifications are within that VU number, so it's probably going to be a bit more above 47 million acres. But you have to exclude all those legislatively designated areas out of the 100 million acres that the state owns currently.
Senator Wilikowski.
Can you explain the rationale for excluding this act from requiring a written best interest finding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we have multiple different types of authorizations that are excluded out of the best interest finding. I think this was something that we thought would be a way for us to be able to meet the needs to not have such a robust decision. We would still have a decision because, of course, if it gets appealed or goes to court, we need to have something of the record to show why we made the decision that we did. But this could be a really popular program. So we want to be able to make sure that we can meet the needs of the public without having too many staff that we're requesting.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. The first is, I believe we heard a bill very similar to this last year that caused some pretty active debate and discussion. And I'm wondering how this bill differs from the one that was brought 2 years ago, if at all. And the second question is, so you said 10 acres every 10 years. Is that on an individual basis? So, for example, if I had a family of five, could that family attempt 50 acres, for example?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, for your first question on how this is different from previous bills, we've had a couple different versions of this bill, and 2 years ago it had an ability to permit up to, I think, 25 or 30 years, the ability to lease for a longer term, where this bill, I would say, is geared definitely more towards not having a permitting regime or a permitting program for long term or a leasing program, but more of getting people into the purchase and the ownership of that particular parcel. We also did not include the personal use cabin program at that time in that particular bill. I think adding it into this bill particularly is helpful because it addresses some of those longstanding issues that we're having with folks that are unable to obtain that land, or if somebody has died, a lot of folks are very upset because they don't have anyone else that they can transfer that particular cabin and that ownership to with a permit. And then for your second question, I'm trying to remember what that was. The ownership or the ability to have multiple family members, yes, it's done by individuals. So if each individual wants to purchase, then they could do that. But they do have to, if they nominate, they do have to be a quarter mile apart. And the reason we did that is to make sure that we didn't have blockage of lakes or rivers or access. And so we want to make sure that we protect that. So we did require that it's a quarter mile. The PUCP program was exempted from that. And then those that are on mining lands that had a valid mining claim also were exempted from that just due to they might already exist. And so it'd be difficult to then say they don't qualify if they happen to be closer to one another.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
First of all, I commend you on that quarter mile separation. I think it's a really thoughtful policy choice. Does the person making the nomination have to be 18 years old or otherwise legally able to do so?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, yes, they have to be 18 years of age, and they have to be a resident.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill refers to recreational cabin or recreational cabin site. I don't see a definition of that, though, and so I'm kind of wondering what would be allowed to be built. You know, are we limiting this to single-room dry cabin? Can I build a second home somewhere in between? What are we getting at here?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, the intent of the program is for recreational private use. And during the term of the lease, the expectation is that it's going to be used for private uses. Once we sell that parcel, we're not going to monitor if you use it for commercial activities. How big of a structure that you put onto this property is up to the owner. So we are not limiting it to some sort of a dry cabin or something else. It's up to that individual on what they build. And if for any reasons they're unable to move forward with the purchase, we do have requirements within the bill that they clean up the land, or if we take ownership of the land, then we could sell the land with the infrastructure on it and then give them back a portion of that proceeds that we might have made from the infrastructure being on the land. So the hope is, of course, that they can move forward without us going through that whole termination process.
Follow-up, Senator Myers?
No, thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Can you help me? Can you help me understand Section 8? Going through it, it's uncodified, so I'm curious why that. Maybe an explanation of that. But then if you go to page 11, paragraph D, it It says all dispositions and uses under A of this section of lands that are part of a state park, state forest, state game refuge, state wildlife refuge, state game sanctuary, et cetera, et cetera. And so it specifically identifies those, and then it goes on later in that paragraph to say, in considering whether to approve a nomination under this subsection, the commissioner shall consider whether the disposal is consistent with the uses of the land. And then it goes on to say, land subject to this subsection may be leased or sold regardless of its classification. So it looks to me like the commissioner is able to lease or sell land within state game refuges, state forests, state parks. Am I reading that wrong?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, you're not reading it wrong. I probably will refer to Chris Orman online. I just know that we've done our due diligence on looking where these personal use cabins exist, and this section only refers to personal use cabins specifically. And so I'm not 100% sure if it was more of just to make sure if there's something out there that we don't know exists on a legislatively designated area. It's covered in this section, but I can refer to Chris Orman for more detail on that.
Mr. Orman, did you hear the question and provide us with an answer?
Senator Geisel, I did hear the question. Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. So first, Director Collis is correct that Section 8 is only about personal use cabin sites. I think that subsection D, so just for everybody's reference, this is lines 5 through 12 of page 11 of the bill, about the all dispositions and uses. So I think there's a few questions there. First, it's noting, you know, state park, state forest, state game refuges. Just all of those are listed there just to make sure and clear that ultimately all of the PUCPs that are quote out there that would be considered are going to be included in this. And I'll note, if you look at subsection C, which is just right above, it actually says the lands affected by this section, including those sites listed in the PUCP master list that's maintained by the Department of Natural Resources. So there'll be a list of the PUCPs, and then D is basically saying, pursuant to those PUCPs that have been identified by, and PUCPs, personal use cabin permit, I apologize, everyone, acronyms floating into my discussion here. Now under subsection D, it's going to be those that DNR has listed and identified, wherever they may be, a refuge, a game sanctuary, a marine park, a critical habitat area, that the commissioner has the ability to then work through the nomination process and accept and then dispose of the land, or not the commissioner, but the lands can be nominated, then the commissioner can work through the disposal process that's outlined in 3805-600 as envisioned in this bill. Lastly, though, then it notes the classification piece, and I think this is important because I think that was then kind of the second piece you had asked, which is what this means is that right now those lands that are within those refuges and those areas isn't classified for disposal. And classifying those lands for disposal and for sale or you know, wouldn't be possible and would be a problem. So what this is allowing is to say, if you have a PUCP in this area, it doesn't need to go through the classification process because effectively the legislature has said that it doesn't need to. And I can just say the classification process would be complicated because of the nature of these areas. So I hope that answers both the kind of the questions that I think were raised here.
All right. Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
I have a lot more questions, Madam Chair, but I know we have a number of people who are waiting online for public testimony, and I would suggest we hear from them at some point.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Senator Kawasaki, you had a question.
Yeah, just briefly for Mr. Orman, too. So it looks like what you're trying to say is that the cabins that are potentially in one of these areas is it's already in a list right now. It's in Director Collis's hands. Can we get a copy of that list?
Director Collis?
Christy Collis, for the record. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, yes, we could provide that list to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Myers, and we do have many people online wishing to testify.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So The nomination process. I think you mentioned that there's already something of a nomination process in other programs. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, there's not a nomination process in the sense of I want this parcel, I want to apply for it. It's more of a here's an idea I have, I'd like you to sell land in this location, and then we consider it, write a decision, and then we put it out for staking for multiple people.
Okay.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you. So it looks like in this bill, though, you're getting more towards the more specific, I want to buy this parcel, and but it's still got to go up for public notice. It's still got to go out to a competitive bid process, it looks like. Do you think that that would be a disincentive for folks to nominate a parcel, thinking, you know, unless they've got enough money that they're not worried about getting outbid?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, so if they nominate the parcel, they don't have to go through the bidding process. They just pay fair market value. So if they're the first one to come to us in the door and ask for this location, if it's not encumbered, if it's land that we could dispose of, if there's access to it, then we could go through, write that decision that goes out for public notice, telling the public that we've made this decision, and then they could purchase it for this fair market value. And then they'd also have to pay for that cost of appraisal and survey.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Ms. Collins, I see we have slide 12, and that would conclude, and I believe this is part of the fiscal note.
Correct. So slide 12, we anticipate high interest in the program from both nominations and permit holders. So to fully implement the program, we're requesting one specialist three starting in fiscal year 26 to promulgate regulations for a total of $144,700. And then starting in fiscal year 27, we're requesting an additional two positions, which would include a surveyor and another specialist for title work. The PCN gained in FY26 will transition to adjudication of applications for nominations once regulations are completed. So a total of $487,700.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you just said you thought you'd have relatively high interest. You've got a estimate of the cost. I was wondering if you had, by your whatever definition high interest would be, realize that's relative, an estimate of how much land you think you would sell and how much you'd gain off of it per year, roughly.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I don't have those types of numbers. I just know we've had a lot of interest from folks. On top of the fact the personal use cabin program, we have 421 people that were in that program particularly, and would probably, I'd say at least half of those individuals would probably qualify, giving us 200 and something locations across the state that we would have to then write decisions for. And that's outside of other nominations, not within that program particularly. So that's why we are seeking those additional PCNs, because we would have that additional workload.
And that looks like it concludes your presentation.
Thank you very much for the conversation, and I appreciate everybody hearing our presentation on Senate Bill 105.
Thank you. We do have a number of people online, so I'm going to open public testimony. I'm going to begin in the Anchorage LIO, and then I'm going to go to Homer, and then I'll go to the off-net. So I'm going to try to maximize the number of people that can be heard today, and so I'm going to limit public testimony to 1 minute. I know that seems super short, but you'd be surprised how much you can get in that period of time. So for each of you that will be testifying, please begin by identifying yourself by name and who you are representing. I'm going to start then in the Anchorage LIO. There's Pat Garrett. Pat, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Hello, I'm Pat Garrett, and I'm a resident of McCarthy. I've lived there for 22 years, and I have a question first, and then I have a brief statement. How is the land determined, and what is the access to the recreational land near McCarthy?
Ms. Garrett, we aren't answering questions. We're listening to public testimony right now.
I'm sorry, you were talking to me at Scarborough.
Ms. Garrett, we are taking public testimony. It is not a question and answer time period.
Oh, okay. Well, my question, my testimony is that I am a 22-year resident there. I restored a historical cabin on private land ownings that were in the park. And I'm concerned about access because we don't have a road. The McCarthy Road is notorious for not even working for us. And the other thing is our outhouses. We have two outhouses that we have to pump in the summer at our expense. And if there's an influx of people coming in, our outhouses aren't going to hold it. So basically, we don't have the infrastructure to support a big bunch of people coming. And our bridges won't hold equipment. And the other one thing is we use that land ourselves, the residents, for firewood. And we forage there for mushrooms and berries. And so it's land that's used.
Ms. Garrett, thank you for your testimony. Your minute is up. Could you summarize, do you support or oppose the legislation?
The land that's in question is land that we use, local residents use already.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. We'll move now to the Homer LIO. There are three people there. I'm going to start with Robert Archibald. Robert, welcome. If you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Chairperson Giesel, members of the committee, my name is Robert Archibald. I live here in Homer, and just for disclosure, I'm the chair of the Kachemak Bay State Park Citizens Advisory Board, but I'm testifying for myself. I'm opposed to this bill for many reasons, which I can't explain to you all right now, but access is a big problem in some of these areas, especially where you have cabins proposed in critical habitat areas, state parks. I think that you need to do more research on this because some of these areas are getting torn up by people that are using ATVs and the such to make access. If they're out in a rural area with no access, they're tearing up the countryside and detrimental to everything. So as far as going into the state parks, you know, statutes for establishing state parks work too. Preserve and protect, and this is not doing that. And in my opinion, personal inholdings should be bought back by the state when they become available. So thank you very much for allowing my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Archibald. Next up is Sue Christensen. She will be followed by Gordy Vernon. Ms. Christensen, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. My name's Sue Christensen. I also live in Homer. Thank you all for your time and just the commitment that you have given us as representatives and for our state. I, too, am strongly opposed to this. It needs a lot more scrutiny. The founding statue I'm especially concerned for refugees or for refuges and state parks. That were created to protect and preserve the land and water for its unique and exceptional wilderness value. A lot of, you know, if individuals can go in and commercial activities can take place there, it's just incongruous with the statutes that they were created by. But I also have been in a lot of areas where lots of gas cans and plastic and all those things are left that really are not cared for well. So anyway, 1 minute isn't enough time to tell you, but thank you again for listening and considering the bill.
You're welcome. And at the end of this hearing, I'm going to give you ways to send in written testimony. Next up, Gordon Vernon, there in Homer. Then we're going to go to the off-net with Wayne Hall. So Wayne, you can line up. Mr. Vernon, welcome.
Hi, I'm Gordy Vernon, Homer, Alaska, and I am a remote parcel owner from back in the 80s, and it was a good program, but like your statistics prove, about three out of four cabin plans are going to fail, and I've been through some really trashy areas along the Skwentna River where people have tried to homestead and shop at Walmart. It's not working, and they just leave a terrible pile of plastic behind and discarded baby carriages and those things. And that was all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vernon. Next up, as I said, is Wayne Hall. He's calling from Anchorage. He'll be followed by Judy Brackle. Welcome, Mr. Hall. Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Yes, my name is Lane Hall. I'm in Anchorage, 47-year resident here. I just want to address first off the Section 8D and those 14 different categories of protected state land now. It's very convoluted to me the way it's in the bill. What I'd like to see is a statement in there that just says any parcels under this program are prohibited in those 14 categories. Just make that real clear. Otherwise, I could see a lot of dancing around in the future. Another thing I'd like to address, and I think there'll be negative impacts on wildlife and wildlife habitat as a result of this. Probably be more wildfires, which increase the cost of the state. It's going to put private property parcels randomly scattered around Alaska and the best Alaska lands that are not already privatized. And public access to and across those lands will be closed. And once such a parcel is sold to an individual, they can use it for commercial purposes. They can subdivide it, resell it, whatever they want. And what I've just one more thing I'm going to say. I'm just hearing here today that these leases can be assigned, so somebody can be at the very beginning of a lease. They could assign it to somebody. I think that encourages speculation. It can go to a non-resident. You can say you have to be a resident to apply, but if you assign the lease, that can go to anybody. Anyway, thank you for the time, and let me get that last part in.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Next is Judy Brackle. She's calling in from Gustavus. She'll be followed by Casey Adderhold. Ms. Brackle, welcome.
Okay, I'm calling from Gustavus. I've lived my whole life in Southeast Alaska, various parts of it. I wish Mr. Armin would consider, or my attorney there, would consider modifying the language when it lists all those recreational areas, wildlife refuges, et cetera. It says the lands affected by this section include those sites in the personal use cabin permit list. Well, why shouldn't it say are limited to those sites? Then I want to say that we have in Gustavus, we have a lot of state land, and we are quite concerned. I know many of us are about this bill. We've done a lot of community organizing and work over many decades to preserve wild lands here and get community buy-in on that idea. And we hate to see this sort of thing happen, to just randomly start, selling cabins, say, spaces. Humans have an ability to hone in on the very places that are important to wildlife. So even though it's not a special refuge, just, look for those places. Humans do the same thing as the people did, as the wild animals do.
Thank you, Ms. Brackle, for your testimony. Your time has gone up. Could you please verify your name for the record? What is your name? Ms. Brackle?
Oh, my name?
Yes. Need to state your
Judy
name.
Brackle.
Thank you very much.
Judy Brackle, yes.
Thank you. Uh-huh. All right. We're going to move on now to Casey Adderhold in Homer, followed by Matthew Robus. Mr. Adderhold, please state your name and give us your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Casey Adderhold. I am from Homer, and today I'm representing myself. I oppose Senate Bill 105. The low percentage of lands held by private individual hands gives us an advantage as a state to manage intact public lands effectively, making decisions that benefit Alaskans as a whole and for the long term. There's already a process for Alaskans to obtain state land for recreational purposes. I would encourage instead an investment in our Alaska state parks and the maintenance and establishment of public use cabins for all. In the Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, or SCORP, a survey of Alaskans ranked public use cabins as the most needed for development, even above highway restrooms, and we all know how much we need those. I encourage this committee and our governor to focus on what we know is good for Alaskans recreationally and economically. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Adderhold. Next up, Matthew Robus. Mr. Robus, please state your name for the record. You will be followed by James Squires. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Matthew Robus. I'm a resident of West Juneau, and I'm also a former director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation, retiring in 2007. Ironically, one of my first jobs, actually my first job with the department back in 1981, was to represent the Department of Fish and Game in discussions with the Commissioner of Natural Resources about land disposals. And what we found there, and I think has been true down through the years, is that because of the limited access and limited hotspots of resource richness, it's natural for people to settle in areas that by their very settlement and development impedes access to resources by all other Alaskans to some extent. And I think the committee and the legislature as a whole needs to be very cautious about allowing individuals to pick where they're going to reside.
Thank you. Mr. Robus, your time is up. If you could summarize, please.
Yeah, I'd like to summarize. I'm very concerned about Section 8D. I think that it's inappropriate for the state to be permanently disposing of any land inside special areas, and this legislature should respect decisions made by former legislatures about those crown jewels of our resource values.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Robus. Your time has concluded. Thank you for calling in. Next up is James Squires from rural Deltana. He'll be followed by Matt Obermiller. Mr. Squires, welcome. Your name and your testimony, please. 1 minute.
My name is James Squires, and I oppose SB 105. It may be eye-opening to you when you see this bill applies to potentially all state land, not just the large amounts of land already potentially available and classified as settlement land. You might ask about the physical metrics increasing expenses on fighting wildfire when cabins pop up as a result of this bill outside of areas DNR currently designates for staking and development where fire mitigation has already been taken into account. The physical note is way off as it only discusses the additional employees they think they need to administer the program to dispose of land. There's no provision for increased efforts that will be taken by the Division of Forestry in dealing with fighting wildfire and how they triage limited resources via air tanker attacks, smoke jumpers, crews, and equipment when it comes to protecting the structure in the path of a wildfire. There's a new cabin as a result of this program, increase a level from limited to full or critical, where there's no limit to state funds spent to protect property. This legislation will start a gold rush. And gold rush it will be. There will be a one-time rush to grab the choicest tracts around the state. And I expect already have their spots picked out. Someone could nominate and stake alongside or across desirable routes across groomed snow machine trails. With 10 people in your extended family, you could take the most prime 100 acres along a prize bluff or river and control far more land than what amounts to a take when it requires that one site be one quarter of a mile from another.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Squires. I appreciate you calling in. Next, we'll move to Matt Obermiller and Kenny Lake. He'll be followed by Alan Parks. Mr. Obermiller, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Matt Obermiller. I'm a 31-year full-time resident of Tinkle at mile 55 on Richardson Highway. I'm a general contractor and lifelong backcountry and wilderness user. I'm strongly against SB 105. It doesn't appear to have been well thought out. There are a lot of unintended consequences that haven't been addressed by the proponents. There's already a large number of public use cabins in the state, and all Alaska residents, including potential cabin site tract purchasers, can already go travel and camp pretty much anywhere on the public lands they want. However, once public land is sold, all the rest of the residents of the state are barred from using or enjoying that land forever. If SB 105 passes, large areas of high quality, previously untouched wilderness, will have four-wheeler and hunting buggy trails to trophy cabins and landing strips right in the middle of that. We already have a handful of public land disposal programs in places that have all been net losses for state coffers in both the short and long term. SB 105 is going to cost all Alaska residents while benefiting only the wealthy few who can afford to stake, buy, and build on. SB 105 will be mainly a lavish giveaway to the wealthy. Thank you.
If you'd identify yourself. Mr. Parks?
Yeah, hi. My name's Alan Parks. I live in Homer, Alaska. Is this, I guess you're calling on me to testify right now?
You are correct.
All right, thank you. Yeah, as I said, I'm Alan Parks. I live in Homer, Alaska. I really appreciate all the public testimony comments that have been said. I agree with all of them. It's a not a very well thought out bill. One of the things that I appreciated was the discussions within the committee about public notice, and I remember quite clearly what a benefit the coastal zone management plan was, and when that went away, it really reduced the public notice process and for locals to know what was going on in a efficient way. So I really appreciated those comments that the committee had. I'm opposed to it. I don't know how many times I need to say that. It's just a bad bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Parks. Next up is Stevens Harper. He's in McCarthy. He'll be followed by Rod Arno. Mr. Harper, welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name is Stevens Harper. I'm calling from McCarthy, Alaska. I am opposed to Senate Bill 105. The McCarthy area includes state land that residents rely on for wild firewood and wildlife harvest. Selling cabin sites on this land would negatively impact this important existing use. Recreation cabin site development would increase the human-caused wildfire threat in our area, which is the biggest threat to our community. It would also increase demand for emergency services, which places an additional burden on existing community members and our poorly funded nonprofit emergency services organizations. McCarthy is not in an organized borough and has no local government to address an increase in services that this kind of development would create. The Department of Natural Resources Copper River Basin area planning process should be allowed to continue to address the question of appropriateness of selling public land for private recreation cabin sites. I believe Senate Bill 105 circumvents this existing appropriate public process. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Harper. Next up, Rod Arno from Palmer. He'll be followed by Walter Mockstad. Mr. Arno, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Rod Arno. I'm a Palmer. I'm the public policy director for the Alaska Outdoor Council, which has spent decades advocating for public access to public resource. And the Outdoor Council opposes this piece of legislation. Hopefully it doesn't get out of committee and I don't have to waste any more time on it. But the Outdoor Council looks at where we are today and the loss of opportunity on 220 million acres of federal land for 75% of the Alaskans who buy hunting and fishing license. And we look at the public domain on state land as being extremely important to our membership. And the Outdoor Council supports AS 3805-015, public interest in retaining state land and public ownership. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Arno. Next up, we have Walter Mockstad from Minchumina. He will be followed by some folks here in the room. Mr. Mockstad, welcome.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've never done this before. I'm a resident of Lake Minchumina. I'm second generation Alaskan born. Lived most of my life in the interior, a little bit on the coastal areas, but I am heartened at the impetus of this bill. I am very glad for it, and I'll tell you why. There is a dearth of opportunities for land ownership in the remote interior of Center. There are parcels available, but most of the testimony I've heard is from people who live along the road systems or elsewhere, and I understand very much to protect that. but for 30-some years I've had a trap and cabin permit. It started out as a very simple document on state land, and it became convoluted and turned into about a 30-page tome with ever-increasing costs and regulations. And if I could simply own 5 acres, 2 acres, 1 acre around something I've invested and my family has a good portion of our lives to, that would be a great gift. We cannot pass it on as it stands now. And it's the only one that survived. I had 80 miles of trapping trails. I've lost 4 camps. This is the only one remaining. And I went to fire, wildfire. And I would appreciate very much, this is the first glimmer of opportunity of being able to take in personal ownership a little piece of state ground. It's not going to impact anybody. It's not on the river anywhere. It's arduous and difficult to get to because it's just wintertime. And trails, trap line trails, it's a special place. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Mr. Mockstead, please state your name for the record.
Walter Mockstead.
Great. Thank you so much for your testimony and for calling in and patiently waiting. Here in the room, we have Lillian Thornington, who wishes to testify. Please come forward. She will be followed by Mary Glaver. Welcome, Ms. Thornington. Please give us your name and your testimony.
Hi, my name is Lillian Thornington. I am your reigning Miss Juno, and I'm also an intern for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers of Alaska. I would like to speak on the importance of public lands. My pageant platform, Nature Without Limits, focuses on making the outdoors accessible for everyone. I feel that public lands are integral to this mission. I was a Girl Scout for 14 years, and access to public lands was essential for me to learn my outdoor skills as well as my life skills. Public lands give an opportunity for outdoor recreation for everyone, but especially low-income households, like the household I grew up in. Spending time outdoors offers an opportunity for personal growth and learning. In Alaska, we also have a higher-than-average rate of suicide and depression. It's no secret that mental health is an issue here. It's been repeatedly proven that spending time outside positively impacts our mental health, and I'm concerned that taking away a mental health resource will have a negative effect on our most vulnerable community members. I'd like to end with a quote from Henry David Thoreau. At present, in this vicinity... Thank you.
Before you leave, Ms. Thornton, could you please state whether you support or oppose the legislation?
I oppose it. I'm in favor of public lands and public hands. Thank you.
Very nice. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could we hear the Thoreau quote?
Ms. Thornton.
Thank you. I've been really excited about this, and my teacher is going to be happy.
All right. Please proceed.
At present, in this vicinity, the best part of land is not private property, the landscape is not owned, and the walker enjoys comparative freedom. But possibly the day will come when it will be partitioned off into so-called pleasure grounds, in which few will take a narrow and exclusive pleasure only. When fences shall be multiplied, and man traps, and other engines invented to confine men to public roads, and walking over the surface of God's earth shall be construed to mean trespassing on some other gentleman's grounds. To enjoy a thing exclusively is to commonly exclude yourself from the true enjoyment of it. Let us improve our opportunities then before the evil days come. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Glaver, please come forward. Welcome, and by now you know the drill.
I do. Thank you. My name is Mary Glaves, and I am representing Alaska Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We oppose Senate Bill 105. Passing this bill would mean a loss of opportunity for public lands access that creates further limitation of resources that are currently available to all Alaskans on public state land. Alaskans enjoy bountiful and unique outdoor opportunities because of public lands. This program would additionally increase habitat fragmentation, impeding wildlife, and degrading the habitat they rely on. Removing public lands from public hands is not in the best interest of the public or Alaskans. Alaska BHA urges Senate Resources Committee to reject this bill, and as well as consider precedents set by these types of bills for all Alaskans.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Committee.
All right. It looks like that concludes the people that are signed up today. I am going to leave public testimony open. I will share with those that have spoken today. We will accept your testimony in writing if you'd like to submit it. You can send it to Senate Resources at akleg.gov. So that's Senate Resources, no dots or anything like that, at akleg.gov. I will also share that I have received bountiful testimony on this bill, as I believe committee members have also. So at this time, we're going to set Senate Bill 105 aside. Senator Dunbar, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you would, as we're in the process of setting this aside, I just want to state I had a little disagreement with the commissioner at the start. According to the DNR Division of Forestry, 12.1% of Alaskan land is in private ownership, not 1%. Of course, the majority of that, more than 10%, is Alaska Native land. But I think it's important for us to acknowledge the Alaska Native corporations are private landholders. And the only thing restricting cabin construction or other construction on their land is you can lease or own that land, but you have to enter into, you know, a fair market negotiation with those Native corporations and subject yourself to the market. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. I will also acknowledge that Senator Klayman has been online for the past 50 minutes. This concludes our meeting for today. As I said, we're setting this bill aside. The next meeting will be this Wednesday, March 19th at 3:30 p.m. At that time, we're going to hear consideration of the governor's appointees for the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and we will be hearing Senate Joint Resolution 8, International Relations with Taiwan. That will have invited and public testimony. We also may have time for some additional bills previously heard. That will be noticed as soon as anything like that is identified. So at this time, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. The time is 5:01 p.m.